On December 20th, 2009, Logan McQuarrie was supposed to gain physical custody of his nearly 8-month-old son, Gabriel. But when Logan arrived to pick him up, both he and Gabriel's mother, Elizabeth Johnson, weren't home. For days, Logan tried contacting Elizabeth, but she didn't respond. Then, on December 27th, Logan received a text message from Elizabeth claiming she had murdered Gabriel. Investigators immediately launched a search for both Gabriel and Elizabeth, but when they located Elizabeth days later, Gabriel was nowhere to be found. Elizabeth eventually told police that she didn't kill her son, but instead participated in an underground adoption in San Antonio, Texas. Investigators looked into Elizabeth's claims, but they were never able to confirm her story. It's been almost 15 years since Gabriel disappeared, and investigators are still searching for him. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Lavasser. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals and or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. And while we're at it, I'm going to change it up a little bit. I see a lot of subscriptions coming in. I see a lot of the views are up. Thank you very much for that. But while you're watching or listening to this content, I'd really appreciate it if you take 2 seconds and leave a rating and a review. As you probably already know, that's what really spikes the algorithm and gets more eyes and ears on these shows and the cases we're covering. So if you would take a second to do that, I'd really like to see your review. I read them all. It would be greatly appreciated. Okay, so Gabriel Johnson, also known by some as Baby Gabriel, this is a mysterious case. This is really a 50-50 on what happened here. And the good news is it's either a really bad outcome or potentially, I don't want to say good one, but a better scenario where our victim may actually still be alive. And I've always said it to you guys in other cases, unless we have definitive proof that our victim is deceased, I always classify these cases as missing. And I want to go over all the facts. I do have some theories on it, and it may potentially lead one way more than the other. But there's a lot of facts and circumstances to this case, and considering when it happened, yes, it's not the newest case we've ever covered, but you would think with the digital evidence that would be available, we may have more answers than we have questions, and that's clearly not the case, or I wouldn't be covering it. But children's cases are always the toughest for me as a parent, but it's a necessary evil. They need our help just as much as the adults do. So when it comes across my desk, and it's an interesting story that I feel needs some rejuvenation as far as the coverage it gets, because this is definitely a case that probably some of you have heard before, that's when I'd like to step in and go over it from start to finish. So with that out of the way, let's dive into this week's case. Gabriel Scott Johnson was born on May 3rd, 2009 in Tempe, Arizona, to parents Elizabeth Johnson and Logan McQuarrie. By all accounts, Elizabeth was not in a great place to have a child. Her grandfather, who helped raise her, told the Arizona Republic that Elizabeth was impulsive, secretive, and prone to fits of rage. Logan's father described her as having unpredictable mood swings. He said, quote, "One day she would be happy and easygoing and good, and the next day not good, breaking things and yelling." When Gabriel was born, Elizabeth struggled to take care of him. Logan later stated in court documents that, quote, "Elizabeth said several times that she doesn't want the baby. She yelled and screamed at him. When I would go to work, I would put the baby in his room, and when I get home 5 hours later, he would still be in the room with no changed diaper crying. I would ask her what she was doing, and she would yell at me and say, quote, go shut that thing up. Terrible. As you can imagine, Elizabeth's behavior led to many fights with Logan. In June of 2009, after a heated argument, Elizabeth flew to Boston with Gabriel, who was only weeks old, saying she needed to, quote, get away from Logan and visit with her grandmother. While on her way back home, Elizabeth had a long layover at an airport where she met a woman named Tammy Peters Smith. Tammy, who lived in Arizona with her husband, later told the Arizona Republic that when she noticed Elizabeth and Gabriel at the airport, Elizabeth appeared tired and depressed. Tammy said, quote, I looked at the situation and thought, she doesn't want that baby. Now, when I first read this, this struck me as odd because, as someone who flies pretty frequently, if you fly a lot, you know what I'm talking about. You see a lot of interesting people, a lot of characters, and yeah, you see some parents who are struggling with their kids who normally don't want to be at the airport. And so I don't know how, during this brief observation, she was able to determine that Elizabeth didn't want the baby. But this is according to her, and listen, she really went through with it because after coming to this conclusion, Tammy approached Elizabeth and asked if she was considering placing Gabriel up for adoption. Elizabeth responded and said that she was, but explained that Gabriel's father would never agree to sign the necessary paperwork. Tammy expressed interest in adopting Gabriel if the situation ever changed and gave Elizabeth her contact information. After returning to the home she shared with Logan, Elizabeth continued to struggle with her temper. In September, tensions escalated to the point where she became so enraged that she cut up Gabriel's clothes, destroyed his crib, and broke all the windows in their apartment. As a result, she was charged with domestic violence-related offenses, and Logan obtained an order of protection against her. However, just a few days later, the couple reconciled, and the order was dismissed. Logan later shared that he was trying to work through their issues, hoping they could stay together for Gabriel's sake, but ultimately, the relationship wasn't working. On December 8th, the couple broke up, and Elizabeth told Logan to leave their home. The next day, Elizabeth called Logan and said that she wanted to place 7-month-old Gabriel up for adoption. She explained that she knew a couple interested in adopting Gabriel, but she needed Logan to sign over his parental rights. Obviously, he refused. According to the Arizona Republic, despite Logan's refusal, Elizabeth reached out to Tammy Smith to see if she was still interested in adopting Gabriel. Tammy said yes, and shortly after, Elizabeth signed over power of attorney to Tammy and her husband Jack. With the power of attorney, Tammy and Jack temporarily took custody of Gabriel. They were able to do all of this because Elizabeth and Logan weren't married, and Logan had not yet legally established his parental rights. On December 11th, Logan set out to establish his rights by filing for full custody of Gabriel, but just 3 days later, on December 14th, Elizabeth met with Tammy and Jack in secret to work on the adoption paperwork. The next day, Elizabeth told her grandfather that she was, quote, taking care of business by letting Tammy and Jack adopt Gabriel. Elizabeth said that Gabriel would have a better life with the Smiths. She explained, quote, I want him to have a better life than I did, and the way things are going with me and Logan, he doesn't have a chance. Now, according to the Arizona Republic, on December 17th, a judge decided that Elizabeth and Logan would have joint custody of Gabriel. However, the ruling also stated that Logan would have physical custody starting December 20th. After the hearing, Logan tried to contact Elizabeth to arrange a time to pick up Gabriel, but she responded by telling him he would never see Gabriel again. Now, fast forward to the 20th of December, Logan went to Elizabeth's home to pick up his son, but when he arrived, the place was completely emptied out. He tried to contact Elizabeth, but his attempts were unsuccessful. So Logan went to the authorities, but because Elizabeth still had joint custody, there was very little they could do. And that just goes to show you what type of court system we have, where I don't care if it's the mother or the father, if either party decides to just take off with the other person's child and doesn't let anybody know where they're going after making these threats, how is there nothing you can do? But I will tell you, in some states, that is without a doubt the reality of the situation. I've seen it happen. I've been a police officer on some of these calls where I know one party or the other is probably in the wrong, but because of the way the court orders are written, my hands are completely tied. And it's a demoralizing feeling for everybody involved. But we're just getting started in this story. There's still a lot to cover. Some twists and turns are coming up, and we're heading to Texas. So stick around. We're going to take our first break. We'll be right back.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
All right, we're back from break and we're going to get right into it because where we left off before the break is not a good spot. You have a father who's trying to get custody of his son. Mother takes off and basically when he reports it, law enforcement tells him, hey, as long as the orders are the way they are, there's not much we can do. So because of that feedback, Logan knew in order for anything to happen, he needed to have those orders changed. So in a desperate attempt to get Gabriel back, Logan filed for temporary full custody. In court documents, Logan expressed serious concerns, stating, quote, when Elizabeth gets mad, she can and will hurt the baby. A court date was set for December 28th. Until then, Logan continued to search for his son. During this time, Tammy Smith and her husband approached Logan, urging him to sign paperwork that would allow them to adopt Gabriel. They informed Logan that Gabriel would not come home until he agreed to the adoption, but again, Logan refused. So one, I'm not completely sure he ever went to law enforcement with this information. And two, it makes me question the entire interaction because why wouldn't you go to law enforcement if someone said something like this to you? And I'm sure if we had the opportunity to talk to Tammy and Jack, they would probably refute this entire scenario. So just take that into consideration as you're considering all the facts and the information. Okay, so back to the story because this bad situation is about to get a lot worse because on December 27th, Logan received a text message from an unknown number. The message said, quote, you will never find me. I'm already boarding a plane out of the country. When I'm safe, I'll email you the exact location of dead Gabriel's little blue body if the garbage don't come first. And I'm reading this exactly the way it was written. There's a lot of typos and grammatical errors, but this is directly from the transcript, so I want to make sure I got it right. That's exactly what was said. And according to Crime Watch Daily, Logan immediately called the number and Elizabeth answered. He began recording the call and asked her what was going on. She went on to tell him that she killed Gabriel, saying, quote, I suffocated him and he turned blue. That's when I put him in his diaper bag and I put him in the trash can. Terrible. I really hope that that isn't what happened. But let's keep going on with the story because this is going to go back and forth as you will see. Elizabeth went on to say that Gabriel's death was Logan's fault because he had cheated on her. She said, quote, you want to talk to girls? That's the price you pay. All you care about is Gabriel and now he's gone. You know what I'm capable of and you pushed me away. You destroyed my life. Logan later told Crime Watch Daily that he wasn't sure whether to believe Elizabeth when she said she had killed Gabriel. However, something was clearly wrong, so he went to the police with the text message and the recorded phone call, and that's when the police finally began searching for Elizabeth and Gabriel. On December 28th, Elizabeth was supposed to attend a custody hearing in Arizona, but she never showed up. As a result, full custody was awarded to Logan. With Elizabeth no longer having custodial rights to Gabriel, a warrant was issued for her arrest on the charges of custodial interference. As the search for Elizabeth and Gabriel continued, police put together a timeline of their movements. They determined that after the custody hearing on December 17th, where Logan was granted physical custody, Elizabeth borrowed her grandfather's white 1995 Oldsmobile Delta 88. She then met up with Tammy Smith, who had been temporarily caring for Gabriel. When she got there, she took Gabriel from Tammy and fled Arizona, driving her grandfather's car to San Antonio, Texas, where they arrived on December 22nd. Now, according to the Charlie Project, Elizabeth and Gabriel stayed at two hotels in San Antonio, the Quality Inn Fiesta Park and later the Homegate Studios and Suites. At one point, Elizabeth hired a babysitter through Craigslist to watch Gabriel at the hotel. When police interviewed the babysitter, she recalled that Gabriel seemed sad and scared. She also remembered Elizabeth instructing her to give Gabriel a bottle about every hour into the job, and if he started crying, to give him medicine to, quote, shut him up. The police were also able to determine that Gabriel was last seen with Elizabeth on December 26th at the home gate. The next day, Elizabeth boarded a Greyhound bus to Florida, and Gabriel was not with her. Now, while the police were in Florida searching for Elizabeth, authorities in San Antonio focused on the hotels where she and Gabriel had stayed, as well as the landfill, since Elizabeth claimed that she had killed Gabriel and discarded his body in the trash. The only evidence they uncovered was Elizabeth's grandfather's car. It was parked at the Motel 6 near Interstate 35 and Texas 422, close to the bus stop. Now, inside the vehicle, they found the baby seat, but no visible signs of violence. Now, you could look at this one of two ways. We're going to get into some scenarios as far as what Elizabeth said happened besides the murdering of her child. And if it's true, I don't want to get too far ahead here. The car seat could be a positive thing or a negative thing. If it's a murder, then it would explain why she didn't take the car seat. If it was an adoption, you would think that she would give whoever took Gabriel the car seat so that they could transport him. But there is a possibility they already had a car seat because they anticipated this kind of transaction where they were going to take custody of Gabriel. So you don't want to look too much into it. But when I heard the car seat was still inside, I got a little disappointed. I would rather know that it wasn't in the car, because that would suggest that it was still with Gabriel and that he was still alive and well. And while we're here, let's talk about San Antonio a little bit. I just don't see a scenario where you would drive all the way to Texas just to kill your son. So why did you choose San Antonio? What was there? What were you doing there for 4 days? Why did you have to hire a babysitter to leave the hotel? Where were you going? Who were you meeting with? Yeah, it's still possible she killed him. It could have been accidental or intentional. And I don't like the car seat in the vehicle, like I said, but there's something here that's driving me to the theory that she went there with some intention. She was meeting someone in that location. Who that is, I don't know. Now, back to our friend Elizabeth, because on December 30th, she was arrested in Miami Beach, Florida. And although she refused to speak to police, they were able to seize her cell phone and get a search warrant for it. Now, on the phone, they found that Elizabeth had taken photos of Gabriel every day while she was in San Antonio. The last known photographs of Gabriel were taken at the Homegate Studios and Suites on December 26th. In the final photo, Gabriel was wearing a white flannel pajama set decorated with reindeer, Santas, and Christmas trees. He also had on a white knitted cap with light blue and green markings and was sucking on a blue and white pacifier. In his left hand, he was holding a medicine bottle, possibly infant Tylenol. Gabriel's eyes were half closed, and he appeared lethargic, as if he had too much medication. Logan later told the Arizona Republic, quote, "I saw that picture and I just started crying. Even when he was tired, he never looked like that." Now, as far as this photo, if you're watching on YouTube, it's up on the screen right now. You can go take a look at it. It's easy to find. I see what he's saying, and obviously a father would know his child better than I would. But I will also say, just to make him feel a little better about it, I have taken photos of my children where they were mid-blink and they looked like that. So is that possible? Yeah, it is. But I will say it doesn't look great considering he's holding a medicine bottle. Either way, it's a tough photo to look at because that's the last photo we have of Gabriel. And one more thing as I'm dissecting this photo, we know that Elizabeth told Logan she suffocated Gabriel, but it's also possible that she went to San Antonio with the intention on going through with this underground adoption. And on one of those days, in the process of quote unquote shutting Gabriel up, she over-medicated him and he died. That's also possible. I hope that's not the situation, but there's multiple things we have to explore here. And only one scenario, none of them are good, but only one scenario is something that I'm hoping for, which is that Gabriel's still alive. Now, Elizabeth was later extradited to Arizona, where she was charged with kidnapping and custodial interference. Initially, she refused to speak to investigators, but eventually she agreed to sit down and talk with them. She claimed that her earlier statements about Gabriel being dead were false. She said, quote, "I only said those things to upset Logan. He had ruined my life, and he hurt me, so I wanted to hurt him. That was the only thing I could say that would hurt him." Elizabeth then provided a different version of events, stating that she met a couple through an underground adoption agency and decided to give Gabriel to them. According to her, she met the couple at Raymond Rimkus Park in San Antonio at 10 a.m. on December 27th. She handed Gabriel over to them, got back into her car, and left. She described it as a, quote, closed adoption, claiming she didn't know their names or remember what they looked like. Now, when I saw this, okay, I'll buy she didn't know their names, but when she says she didn't remember what they look like and it's only been a couple weeks, that's where her story falls apart for me a little bit. Either she's lying altogether or she's omitting certain facts because she doesn't want Gabriel to be recovered. Now, I'm sure a lot of you are skeptical, as you should be, about Elizabeth's account of what happened, but I will say this. Her story about participating in an underground adoption isn't completely unbelievable. An adoption expert told Crime Watch Daily that at the time Gabriel went missing, San Antonio was considered the, quote, dirty adoption capital of the United States. The expert said that in these underground adoptions, the birth mother would typically meet the adoptive parents in a public place to hand over the child, so that would line up with Elizabeth's story that she met the adoptive parents in a park. In addition to that, the home gate where Elizabeth was staying, it was known in adoption circles. Adoption agencies often used the hotel to house birth mothers and arrange meetings with adoptive parents for paperwork completion. Now, on top of all of that, when Elizabeth was arrested, she had a $20,000 ruby and diamond ring that no one had ever seen her with before. And this is a critical piece of information because in some of these illegal adoptions, birth mothers are paid in jewelry instead of cash because it's less traceable. Now, if I had to guess, there's a lot going through some of your minds right now. At first, you were thinking, Derek, no way there was an adoption. She killed him. Now I just hit you with all that information and you're maybe saying, okay, yeah, that could have happened. But before we get too far ahead of ourselves, while Elizabeth's story is plausible, police were never able to verify her claims about this couple in the park, and investigators did continue meeting and speaking with Elizabeth, hoping to gather more information about this whole situation, but the only thing she ever offered were different versions of her original story, none of which were ever corroborated. So that's where we are. We have multiple scenarios. We have a suffocation, we have a accidental overdose, and we have this underground adoption. All possible, yet none of them substantiated by actual evidence. So that's where we are so far. We have more to go. There's more information that's going to come out. And we can't forget about Tammy and Jack because they're going to come back into this equation as well. We're going to take one more break. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and as I mentioned before the break, Elizabeth drops this underground adoption bomb on everybody, and there's really not a lot of detail. So law enforcement really wants to look into this, which brings them back to Tammy. You remember Tammy? She originally was going to adopt Gabriel, and she had been in contact with Elizabeth, so they wanted to speak with her. So when they finally got the chance to talk to her, she claimed that she had been in contact with Elizabeth after she fled Arizona and had continued texting and calling her right up until the time of her arrest, but she was just trying to coax her into returning back to Arizona and revealing Gabriel's whereabouts. What do you think? Do you believe it? Do you not believe it? Where do you fall on that? Now, according to the Arizona Republic, Tammy said that shortly after Elizabeth texted Logan to say Gabriel was dead, Elizabeth sent her a message claiming Gabriel was actually still alive. Elizabeth told Tammy she had only sent that text to Logan to, quote, get back at him. After speaking with Tammy, police believe she might be withholding information about Gabriel's whereabouts. Both Tammy and her husband Jack became persons of interest since they were the last people to see Gabriel before Elizabeth fled to Texas. Now, I want to point out that the police did search the Smith home but found no trace of Gabriel. However, they discovered that on the 14th of December, when Elizabeth came over to secretly fill out the paperwork, Tammy had put her male cousin's name on the documents, suggesting he could be Gabriel's father instead of Logan. When questioned about this, Tammy insisted that she hadn't meant to lie. She had filled out all the paperwork while taking care of Gabriel, and in all the chaos, she must have written down the wrong information. And as you might expect, the police did not believe her, and I don't blame them. They thought she was trying to bypass including Logan in the adoption process, and I completely agree. Now, according to the media, the police continued to investigate Tammy and found that she had provided Elizabeth with contacts for a place to stay in San Antonio and had given her adoption advice after she fled with Gabriel. At the same time, Tammy was also sending texts to Logan, pressuring him to sign over his parental rights. All of this told police that Tammy played a role in Gabriel's disappearance, but unfortunately, they never found any direct evidence that suggested she knew where Gabriel was after December 26th. She was later convicted of forgery and conspiracy to commit custodial interference and sentenced to 30 days in jail and 3 years of probation. In May of 2010, the lead detective investigating the case in San Antonio was desperate for information, so he decided to visit Elizabeth while she was still in the mental health unit at a Phoenix jail. This meeting occurred without the permission of either the prosecution or the defense. During this meeting, Elizabeth said she killed Gabriel. She explained that she had been frustrated with everything and assumed she was going to jail anyway. She didn't want Gabriel to be with Logan, and she didn't want him to end up with Tammy either. In her mind, the only option left was to ensure that Gabriel would always be hers. So she killed him. As you can imagine, when Elizabeth's attorneys heard about this meeting, they were outraged. They watched the interview and realized that the detective had manipulated her into giving a false confession. Elizabeth, who was on psychotropic drugs, had always been shackled in jail even during meetings with her legal team, but the detective unshackled her. He then gave her some candy, touched her hands and knees, and most importantly, told her that he was the only one that could save her from the death penalty. All of this led to her giving this confession. Now, the police wanted this confession to be used in Elizabeth's trial, but the defense and prosecution both agreed that it shouldn't be. Now, there could be a lot at play here. I feel like, and I've said this before, it's kind of this game going on where the prosecution and the defense are in charge and they're negotiating and they're deploying their tactics. And when you have a rogue investigator who goes out on his own and does his own thing without the permission, the consent from the prosecution, they don't like that. And they can push back on it. And I do feel like this was a fuck you to the detective. But I will also say this, what he did was not the right approach. You want to make sure you're working with the AG's office or working with the prosecution to ensure that you're on the same page. And you want to make sure that you're dotting your I's, crossing your T's, doing it the right way, making sure she's in the right mental state to even give you any type of statement. It doesn't appear that he did that. Now, let's step back for a second and think about what she actually said. I don't know her condition. I wasn't there. I didn't see the interview. But this is alarming, and I'm going to explain why at the end during my perspective. Now, in September of 2012, Elizabeth's trial for kidnapping and custodial interference began. In the end, she was found guilty of the custodial interference, but the jury couldn't reach a verdict on the kidnapping charge. Now, their rationale behind that was that technically, Elizabeth had custody of Gabriel when she took him to Texas. So instead, she was found guilty of unlawful imprisonment. According to some media outlets, before Elizabeth was sentenced, prosecutors offered her a deal. If she told them where Gabriel was, they would recommend her sentence be time served. Elizabeth never responded. Again, that's according to some media outlets. If true, it's not a good sign. Elizabeth was ultimately sentenced to just over 5 years in prison, with credit for the 3 years already served and an additional 4 years of probation. When asked if she had anything to say, Elizabeth expressed regret for taking Gabriel away, but denied ever harming him. She said she just wanted him to have a better life, adding, quote, "I have to live every day without my son and without knowing where he is. That is the worst pain and the worst punishment I could ever have." Now, fast forward a couple years, Elizabeth was released from prison in 2014, and during that entire time, the search for Gabriel continued. Now, over the years, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children released several age progression photos to show what Gabriel might look like as he grew older. The most recent image, released in 2021, depicted Gabriel as a 12-year-old. The agency urged the public to study the photo closely and contact the police if they saw a child resembling him. Now, while all of this is going on, Elizabeth is living her life as a free woman, and in 2021, the same year as the last age progression photo, she welcomed another child who she decided to keep. After having this child, she legally changed her name to Naomi Aragon, stating that she was being stalked and harassed due to the attention surrounding Gabriel's case. Logan's aunt told the Arizona family that it was difficult knowing Elizabeth started a new family. She said, quote, "It's frustrating to know that she has this beautiful little girl that she gets to be mommy to, and yet Logan isn't getting the chance to be daddy to Gabriel." Unfortunately, this is the last major update we have in this case. The search for Gabriel is ongoing, and not a day goes by where Logan doesn't think of his son and wonder, is he out there somewhere? All right, let's dive into this perspective because I want to elaborate on a couple of the things I said. First off, we have two main scenarios. Either Gabriel's alive or he's dead. If he's deceased, he was killed at the hands of his mother. Accidentally or intentionally, we can get to that once we know, but as of right now, that's one option. The second option is that he was taken during this underground adoption, and he's out there somewhere right now walking amongst us, and he doesn't even probably know who he is. Let's first explore the option that Gabriel's gone. There are some things that would suggest that might be the case. You have the pill bottle in his hand in the last photo. You have Elizabeth telling the babysitter to just give him medication if he doesn't shut up, which is clearly something she must be doing. And according to Logan, she wasn't really an attentive mother anyways. As I said earlier in the story, she would leave Gabriel in his room with a dirty diaper for hours. So that's not someone you want taking care of your child. It's not going to end well. So that's the start of it. Then you have the car seat still being in the vehicle. I don't love that. I know that it could be explained away, but I would rather it not be there. And then I do want to talk about this confession that wasn't admitted into court. Yes, it's not going to be admissible for trial, but it doesn't mean we can't talk about it here. I want you guys to ask yourself this question. She's in prison for kidnapping and custodial interference. So the detective comes to her and says, "Hey, I'm the only one that can save you from the death penalty." A little bit of a reminder here. She's not in there for murder, and she's not looking at the death penalty. So unless she admits to killing Gabriel, that's not even an option. He doesn't have to save her from anything. And she must know that. And yet I will acknowledge if she's on these psychotropic drugs and not in the right mind state, maybe that went over her head. But I'm just taking what she said at face value. I don't see why she would say this to a detective when there's no motive. We know the motive for Logan. She was trying to hurt him. But why would she confess to killing Gabriel when there's no incentive to do so? Why would she confide in this person? Was it because she felt comfortable with him? Was it because she felt like the detective knew more than he was letting on? Maybe they had already found Gabriel and she was concerned about that. So because he was throwing out there that he could save her from the death penalty, maybe she felt like getting in front of it was the best play. I just can't wrap my head around why someone would confess to a more severe charge than what they're currently in prison for, but I will acknowledge if she's not in the right mental state and she's looking for companionship and this detective's being nice to her, maybe she felt like giving him what he wanted would make him happy, and in that mental state that she was in, that's all she really cared about. I will acknowledge that's a real possibility, even though I'm not a fan of Elizabeth. Now let's turn our attention to this underground adoption scenario, because although there are a few indicators that maybe Gabriel is no longer with us, I would argue that there's an equal number of indicators that suggests he's still out there. So first off, San Antonio, Texas. At the time, it is known as a location where these underground adoptions are taking place. Second, the hotel where Elizabeth was staying with Gabriel, also known as a place where paternal mothers who were going through this adoption process would stay while the paperwork was being completed until the quote-unquote transaction would take place. And I go back to what I was saying earlier, and I'm not trying to be crass, but if Elizabeth was intending on killing Gabriel, why not just kill him in Arizona? Why go all the way to Texas? San Antonio specifically, which is known for these adoptions, just to kill him. I don't see that being the case. And that's why if he is deceased, it was more than likely an accident. I don't think this was intentional. Doesn't change how I feel about Elizabeth, but I'm just pointing that out. And then you have her down there for multiple days. She's even hiring a babysitter to stay with Gabriel. What is she doing? Who is she meeting? There's only a few scenarios that I can think of, and the most prevalent one would be that she's going through the adoption process. And you also have the fact that she's taken photos of Gabriel every day in San Antonio, and for most mothers, that's pretty normal. You guys are taking multiple photos a day. Even us dads, we're doing it too. But for someone like Elizabeth, who barely paid any attention to her son, it's completely out of the ordinary. And the only reason I could think that she would be taking those photos is because she's showing them to someone, probably to prove that Gabriel is in her possession in Texas. And finally, in my professional opinion, the most significant indicator that Gabriel is still alive is that $20,000 ruby and diamond ring. Where did it come from? How did she get it? I know that the detectives asked those questions. I'm wondering what the answers were. But from where I'm sitting, behind this desk, the best explanation I can have for that ring is that that was her payment for giving Gabriel up for adoption. And the final indicator I want to talk about regarding the possibility that Gabriel's deceased is the fact that the prosecution offered her a deal just to tell them where he was, and she wouldn't do it. Now, that could be because he's dead, or it could be because she really doesn't know. I'm hoping it's the latter. So that's where we are in Gabriel's case. And like many of the investigations I cover, it's going to take one of you to solve this one. So just to recap, nearly 8-month-old Gabriel Johnson was last seen on December 26th, 2009, at the Homegate Studios and Suites in San Antonio, Texas. In the last known photo of Gabriel, he was wearing a white flannel pajama set decorated with reindeer, Santas, and Christmas trees, and a white knitted cap with light blue and green markings. If you have any information in this case, you can call the San Antonio Police Department at 210-207-7660. And my final words, as always, go out to Gabriel's family, specifically Logan, who was on this search to find out what happened to his son. And I'm sure some days, especially after all these years, it can be really tough to get up and go throughout your day. And I'm sure he has friends and family members that are around him. But Logan, if you happen to see this or hear this, I want you to know that you also have us now as well. And we're not only going to be following along with the story, but we're also going to be sharing it in the hope that someone who can actually do something about it sees this and finally comes forward. And I know we're in this weird situation where this story could end one of two ways, but I'm really hoping that Gabriel is out there somewhere. He's happy, he's healthy, and he just doesn't know who he is yet. But as time progresses, maybe he will be able to put the pieces together. And if that day comes, I hope he finds you, and I hope you guys reunite and you have a chance to start building on those memories you lost for so many years. And if that day comes, I will be right here sharing it with all of you. But until then, that's going to do it for me. Everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.